Hello everyone and welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and we'll be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you all please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Today our speakers are Tanya and Calvin, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. Okay, if we could hand over to you then, please, Tanya.
Hi, thanks, Judy. My name is Tanya, and I'm an alcoholic. I was born in Cape Town, South Africa, into a family that looked good from the outside, but was a bit chaotic on the inside. I was a late-born child, and both my parents and my brother were active alcoholics. I don't remember a single day growing up when alcohol wasn't present. Drinking was normal. So fighting was normal. Dysfunction was normal. My parents were successful and, in their own way, loving, but they hated each other. Their relationship was verbally abusive, volatile, and relentless. I listened to it every day. I hated that house, and all I wanted was peace, safety, and love, and none of those things lived there. Because I was late born, I didn't really have friends of my own age, and I learned very early how to sit at adult tables, how to read the room, how to survive conversations. I grew up fast, not because I wanted to, but because I had to. Inside, though, I felt alone, anxious, and unsure of who I was. I had my first drink at 14, and I fell in love immediately. Alcohol didn't just change how I felt, it solved me. It made me feel like I belonged. It gave me confidence. It quieted the anxiety and the loneliness. Alcohol didn't judge me. Alcohol stayed. Alcohol became my safe and the safest relationship I ever had and I ever known. From that point on, alcohol was my solution to everything. I kept people at arm's length. I built walls so high that no one could hurt me the way I would watched my parents hurt each other. I didn't know how to do relationships. The only relationship I trusted was with alcohol. At 18, I moved out of my parents' house, and I thought I'd finally escape the chaos. No more shouting, no more fighting, just silence and alcohol, drinking alone every day, and told myself this was peace. I got married at a very young age after I fell pregnant. We thought getting married was the right thing to do. The marriage lasted just over a year. During the divorce, my ex-husband told me he was going to seek custody of our son because I was unstable, irrational, and untrustworthy. I was furious. I genuinely could not see that I had a problem. In my mind, alcohol made me calmer, better, more capable. A two-year-long custody battle followed, and the fear of losing my son consumed me. The stress, the shame, the gossip, the judgment, the embarrassment, it was unbearable. I drank more. I drank to sleep. I drank not to think. I drank to numb. I drank to disappear because of this great shame. How can a mother lose her child? It's only in movies that I've seen this, and now it was happening to my life. And in trying to cope, I destroyed my own case. It became very clear to me, to a judge, sorry, that I was not in a position to raise a child because I drank over anything that came my way that was distressing instead of just, you know, dealing with things like a grown up. Custody was granted to my ex-husband. That loss broke something in me. For the next 10 years, I drank every single day, all day. I worked, and outside of that, I drank. I kept my job. That's the only thing I could keep, because I knew I had to pay the bills, and this also paid the bills to drink. I was angry, I was ashamed, and I believed I had failed as a mother, a wife, a daughter, and as a human being. I went into hiding, and I started drinking alone where no one could judge me. It became just me and the bottle, and that relationship deepened. I eventually attempted suicide. That landed me in front of a psychologist, and for the first time, someone said out loud that I didn't want to hear. My drinking was feeding my depression and anxiety. Shocker. I tried everything except stopping. I tried drinking less, switching alcohol, rules, schedules, therapy, psychiatrist, antidepressants. I tried not drinking on certain days. Never worked. I always drank because of the panic and despair of not drinking that day. Alcohol was not negotiable to me. Eventually, I stopped fighting it and I leaned into it even more. I accepted that I was an alcoholic and I turned it into a big joke. I decided that I would be the most successful alcoholic. I told myself that this was my card and I would play it better than anyone. My ego was massive. My God complex was strong. I was determined not to fail at alcoholism because I failed at everything else in life. I was going to show the world that I can make a success of my life and be an alcoholic. I told myself I would control it, that I would prove everyone wrong, and that I would still win at the end of the day and I would get everyone back that has left me. What actually happened is that alcohol took everything it hadn't taken before. Medically, I was so screwed. I reached a point where I was exhausted, empty, and out of answers. I had finally run out of ideas, and that, it turns out, was the beginning of my recovery. I landed up in ICU with pancreatitis. The doctors told me that I could not drink anymore. I would actually die. This was a shock, because now my body has failed me as well. I seeked help. I went online and I thought, okay, let me try this Alcoholics Anonymous that I've seen on TV. It's something that they do in America, I thought. And surprise, surprise, there was a meeting not far from me. So I attended the meeting that same night. This was 7 years ago. I walked into the meeting rooms and I was so scared of being judged. I didn't know anyone. Everyone looked random. There wasn't a specific sort or type of person. No one crawled out of a bridge, from under a bridge or anything. Everyone looked quite normal. And that was very interesting to me. So AA became my new little venture. I used AA in the beginning to make myself feel good and to learn new skills, and my God complex never went away. I became sober, but the God complex grew even stronger as well. I very soon realized after a relapse in the program that I did not follow the steps the way it should be followed. I took the whole program and I made it my own. I took every single step and I just, you know, switched it around here and there to fit my seeing and, you know, so that I can be in control of how I was going to run the show. I took step 3 and threw it out. I didn't need a God box. I didn't need to hand anything over. I just kept everything to myself. I could deal with it. I didn't do prayer and meditation, but I did millions of meetings and I did lots of service. It didn't work. I was off balanced. It was an unhealthy, another unhealthy relationship. So I replaced alcohol with this God complex, self-managing, self-deciding AA program, 12-step program. And I spoke to another sponsor. I switched sponsors and my sponsor said, look, why don't you just try it this way? The real way, the 12-step way, the AA way. You do what I say, even though you don't like it. And then afterwards, after we've done all these steps and you hate me for it and you hate your life, then we go back to your idea of living and owning things and, you know, running the show. Okay, so just one try. And I started doing that. It was so hard. I hated every single minute, every single second, because none of it was my idea. If she said jump off the bridge, I jumped off the bridge. If she said drink the blue juice, I drank the blue juice. And you know what? Apparently, the program actually works. I handed over. I did my step three. I'm doing my prayers. I'm doing all the little stupid things that were stupid to me and is now the most important thing in my life. It's become my lifeline. I'm loving the program. I'm loving not following my own chaotic ideas and obsessions of, you know, just being running the show and all of that. I'm doing the steps. I'm listening to the advice, and I'm better for it. Goodness, I can't be more. I can't express how incredibly grateful I am to just listening to another person asking me to trust them and to just sit back, relax, follow the steps, stop fighting it, stop fighting, just hand over, just sit there, do step one, finish step one, be in step one, just be all over your one step, be all over like what you're experiencing right now. Be in the moment. Stop trying to escape everything and trying to fast forward everything. It's not working for you. It's not serving you. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey. And this is why I do service, and this is why I talk about it, because if I knew this 15 years ago, things would have been different. No, I'm not. I don't want to turn back time. I'm glad everything happened like it happened. There's a reason. And it's fine. I've made peace with it, and I'm happy. Everything has worked out as it has. And I really hope that, you know, this program can reach more men and women out there that feel like they're drowning. But yeah, the most important thing that I can say that I've learned is just to honestly stop it, give up, step back. It's not working. Give in, because if you're gonna regret it afterwards, after you've given in and you regret it, then you regret it. Then you move on and you try something else. But what if this actually works? So thank you so much for letting me share my story today. It was great being here.
Thank you so much, Tanya. It was really good listening to you. Calvin, would you like to share now?
Oh, thank you. Hi, I'm Calvin. I'm an alcoholic. As a young man, I too grew up around lots of alcoholics, and most of my family, I suppose, and there was alcohol everywhere. It's a very important part of our culture, it would seem. It's all over the show, and it's quite normalized, all of the bad behaviors that come with it. So growing up, I saw these alcoholics, and I saw their behavior, and would always tell myself, I don't want to be like them. Little did I know, it wasn't really my choice. As a young man, I was very successful. I was successful at school. I was a straight-A student all the way through. I was always in the first team of everything, and I was always in the captain of whatever. Any organization I joined, I became the leader. I would never stop until I did. That was purely ego-based, really. Because of alcoholism, my parents got divorced, and my father, he ended up living a pretty miserable life that I had to watch. I had to watch him find him on the street, walking home from school, sleeping in the gutter on the pavement. I would be approached in the street by people who would tell me stories of what my father had done. And the amount of times he was fired is honestly uncountable. However, he too was very skilled and intelligent in what he did, so he always get his job back, which was similar to my story in a way. I couldn't finish school though, because there were no more funds. There was no more funds to keep me in school. There were no more funds there was no one to really pay for me to live anymore. And being the academic, I was really upset by this, that I wanted to go to university. I wanted to do more. I believed I could. I then entered into a trade. I got a trade job as an apprentice toolmaker, and I didn't enjoy that much, so I went into fabrication. And South Africa, the politics are somewhat confusing, so I realized they're opposing to my race, really. So I realized I was never going to get a really good job. So at 19 already, I decided I'd start my own business. I had very little money, and nevertheless, I started a fabrication business with roughly $300. At the time, I struggled for a while and worked, and I turned this into another massive success. Eventually, we had 120 staff. But through that time, my brain had already made that connection somewhere along the line, and I actually can't remember. I can't remember my first drink. I have no idea. But my brain had already made the connection that any time I felt insecure, any time I felt uncomfortable, alcohol would solve that problem. If I was nervous, if I was anxious, if I was sad, if I was angry, I would drink, and my brain, it would help. My brain connected the dots, connected that this is the medicine. My drinking got worse and worse and worse, as it always does. Alcoholism gets worse, never better. I got to a point where, because I'd made so much money, I managed to get myself out of all the trouble that I ever got myself into. So I wrote off a friend's car. I could buy him a new car. I would destroy a bar. I could get the shop fitters in to refit the bar. I never had to deal with the consequences of the ridiculous actions I had. I would throw tantrums at work that were just, quite frankly, childish. They were just childlike, because the world was not doing what I had asked the world to do, what I had told the world to do. And I would destroy things. I would destroy computers. I would shout at people. It was ridiculous, really, and always feel remorseful afterwards, but nothing that a bit of money couldn't solve every single time. We got to a point, I landed up buying even more businesses, and the more businesses I bought, eventually I landed up with 7. I had a motorbike dealership, I had Skips Electronics, I had lots of different things, and the more businesses that I got, my ego just got more and more inflated. More people knew me, more people called me boss. And because of that, I think I truly did believe I was the king, and that was all I was feeding. However, my whole life of getting more money, getting new cars, getting new bikes, getting new businesses, not one time I can remember, not one time, except my very first vehicle, did any of that money make me happy? Did any of those things bring me any sort of joy? The joy that I felt generally was the chase of it, and the drinking, really. The peace that came from drinking, because my mind was always noisy. Because it was noisy, that's how I thought of it. There were a whole stream of circumstances that led me to, a lot of them regarding to the laws of South Africa, forcing me to sell 51% of my main business for no other reason than race-based laws, really. And this hit my ego really bad. I had built this. I was the king. Why would I now give away the shareholding of my company? I wasn't giving anything away. I would have sold it. I would have been incredibly wealthy. But it was not what I was after. I was after the and I was after being the king, and they were taking that away from me. This truly drove me crazy. My father died before I could help him solve his alcoholism, because I thought I could. I did so much, and I tried and I tried and I tried, and he died alone in a room with 200 bottles of empty liquor. And it was only found a few days later, black. And that really hurt me. And this all happened in a similar time. It led me to a proper psychotic break. And I just broke. I landed up in a mental facility. And for like a 30 days sort of thing. And I was there for, so I went there. When I got in, they put me into this dual diagnosis unit. And one was for addiction issues, and another one was for bipolar. The first few days, I didn't really care what I was there for. I just needed to be there. And then when I came to a little bit, I realized that I was, they told me this thing, and I was like, I don't have any of these. But then I read up about bipolar disorder, about the extreme emotions, really, the extreme happiness, the extreme sadness, the depression, you know, up, down. And I realized, yep, this is me, man. I can stay awake for days and just think and solve every problem faster than everyone around me. And then I crash and I close the curtains and I disappear. And I realized this is, the more I read about it, the more I could agree. But I could never agree to the fact that I was an alcoholic. I was not my dad. My dad was an alcoholic. I was another gutter. I was wealthy. I had my wife. I had my child. Alcoholics don't have that. I have friends. I have all these things, you know, that my dad didn't have, so I'm not an alcoholic. I did my 30 days, and then I went for, I went on holiday. When I left there, I went to Mauritius. So I actually couldn't face the world, really. And I disappeared for a few weeks. And when I came back, I said to my wife, I need to go back. I didn't learn. I need to go back there for another 30 days. And she was angry. She thought I was just hiding again. But it really wasn't the case. I needed to learn. I wanted to. And I went there and we did a whole lot. I went again for another 30 days. And we did a whole lot of cognitive behavioral therapy and all sorts of therapy and all sorts of really cool, really, really helpful things. Went I learned quite a bit about myself and I did a bit of healing, but absolutely no acceptance that I was an addict of any sort. I knew that I couldn't drink a while because I accepted that I couldn't drink due to my, because I was taking this medication. So that part I could agree to myself. I went for a few more months and then I fell into a really excessive depression when eventually they gave me electric shock therapy. They gave me six sessions of electric shock therapy with some sort of ketamine. And that really helped me. I realized after a while I need change, and my daughter cannot be around. There's no real future for her in the country. I came to New Zealand sober on my own looking for an opportunity. I wasn't drinking. Then 3 weeks, I was drunk in the city, telling the cops to leave me alone, really, at 6 a.m. in the morning, because they wouldn't let me sleep on the park bench. Well, isn't that the same behavior as my dad sleeping on the street? So, wasn't enough to stop me drinking. Eventually, my family came, and all that sort of thing carried on for a while. But we got to a point, the drinking just carried on and carried on during the COVID period, where it got to such a point where there was absolutely no happiness. There was morbidity when I was drunk and I was sober. Alcohol had, quite frankly, stopped working, and I drank more. My answer was to drink more and more and more, and it didn't work. And I remember drinking right before the end of that insatiable thirst that just cannot be quenched, and it just needed more and more. And just before I'm about to pass out, and I could feel it from the alcohol, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning by myself, I'd run and grab whatever I could and down it so I can get as much of it in as possible and pass out wherever I do. I got to, at some at some point during this, I gave up. I realized I cannot be happy, sober, or drunk. And I was obviously a bit drunk, and I slipped my wrist on my balcony. My wife came to help me, and the next morning, anyway, I was saved. And the next morning, I came down, and when I came down, she said to me that I came down in the morning, and I saw that she was cleaning up my blood, and I realized what I had done. And my daughter, I thought, what is the plan here, Calvin? You're gonna have your daughter come down the stairs and see you dead on the thing. That essentially changed my life. That gave me desperation, real desperation. I went to AA just a few days later. When at AA, I got myself a sponsor very quickly. It was very, very quickly I got a sponsor. I did the steps, and every single part of my life has changed. I remember the step three when I handed my will and my life over to God. I never felt such peace in my life. That feeling that I'm not in charge anymore, that I'm actually not the one in charge of all this, I'm not responsible, that was just fantastic. The relief of the thought. And now sponsor men, I sponsor other men, I have a great family life, I have a great marriage, I have friends, I am a good friend. Everything about this program, it's incredible. It's just incredible, the absolute change, and it's unfathomable. It's a life beyond my wildest dreams, really. I'm now happier than I ever been, with far less money, far less than I ever had. What an incredible program. And anybody who needs any sort of help, AA is the place. It's free. There's nobody there that wants anything from you. All we want to do is help. That is part of what we do. Thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Calvin. It's amazing hearing the changes in people's lives after coming into the fellowship. Yes, so I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. So thank you to Tanya and Calvin for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here at Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Could we all close the meeting now, please, with the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, everyone.
Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
If you've got a power account and live in Central, East or South Auckland, the Entrust dividend may be coming your way in late September. And who couldn't use a bit extra right now? Look out for the Entrust dividend pack in your letterbox or email inbox. Check your payment details are correct and let us know of any changes as soon as possible. Making sure we have your right details now will mean there will be no delays in paying you in September. Everything you need to know is at entrustnz.co.nz. Check it out.
Listen for the latest news, interviews, and the good music. Listen to 104.6 Planet FM every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. for Radio Akwaaba.
Or you can listen online at planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Akwaaba.
Discover your voice at Planet FM.